This is episode 76 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world. Quick warning, I've rated this podcast an E for explicit. Although there's no language you need to worry about, there may or may not be explicit content. You've been warned. Okay, today's interview is with Amy G. She's super fun and super funny. Before you listen to this interview, you may want to look at her most famous YouTube video. Just look up Amy G. Kazoo and you'll find it there. We reference this video a lot during the interview. After you watch it, you'll know exactly what we're talking about. Plus, it's really, really fun. Now, on to the interview.
Fun fact number 564. John once pooped his pants while fighting a bunch of surfers.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
The List calls her show an unforgettable experience, traveling through a series of transformations and a feat of incredible physicality. Best Magazine says, a virtuoso of physical comedy, a brilliant, insightful stand-up, and a truly sensational singer. One of the funniest people I have ever seen, and that's me talking. Variety Artist, I give you Amy G.
Hey, what's up?
How's it going, Amy?
Good, you're making me blush with those reviews.
Well, they're your reviews.
I know, but still, you still feel it when somebody else reads them out loud.
All right, so let's jump right in. Some of our audience hasn't seen your act, so if I go to see an Amy G show, what am I in for?
Well, in general, I am a big personality that does stupid stuff, and there's usually music involved. There's often skates. There's usually feathers and sequins and or some other sort of maximalist kind of costuming. I'm a professional silly person. I do try to take on something meaningful, so that I'm not just being stupid for the sake of being stupid. I'm being stupid for the sake of like lightening up about something that we need to lighten up about.
Now, are these personal stories?
Yeah. I usually use personal stories, and I'm a physical comedian. Like that's the base level like thing. And I can say to your audience that are variety artists and know this world and won't be scared by the word clown, but I came up as a clown.
Oh.
Really have always had like a big belly laughs in me for physical comedy. I love slapstick. I was a massive fan of silent film, Buster Keaton especially, and Laurel and Hardy, and of course Charlie Chaplin. But that was my fascination. Once I got out of acting school, and sort of maybe even halfway through acting school, I started really digging into physical comedy and clown and studying and researching and getting into creating funny that did not necessarily have to be spoken. Or rather, my grandfather, he was great, but he's not my great-grandfather.
Okay.
My great-grandfather, not my great-grandfather, just my grandfather who is great.
Yes.
was a vaudevillian. And I think those stories sort of stuck in my heart in a way that I wanted to like dig him out. Just an amateur guy in the tri-state area. He worked for AT&T, Ma Bell rather at the time. But he was a tap dancer and an acrobat and a canoe racer and a gymnast. And he played the ukulele. Buster, he kind of looked like Buster Keaton. They called him the Little Giant. He was a little guy, but he was really quite built from his athleticism. Mm. And he had that long nose and the big sad eyes. So he kind of, I think watching Buster Keaton as a kid reminded me of my grandfather.
You're like, grandfather, why are you up on the silver screen there?
Yeah, exactly. But then I just, once I really started digging in and finding that this was a real actual love of mine, then I started studying clown and started like getting into what it means to be a physical comedian and how to find those funnies in myself. And that's just how I relate to everything now. I'm a singer, and I think because I think you need a reason to be on stage in a lot of these variety scenarios. Like if we're talking about circuses or variety shows,
sure.
you want a reason to be on stage, even though the real reason is just to be funny and be a personality that people
be silly.
Yeah. But my excuse for being on stage has always been being a singer.
Oh, yeah. You have one of the top 30 videos on YouTube. At least that's what I read.
Well, I got an email at one point saying, you have one of the top 30 viewed videos on YouTube. Of course, it wasn't I never monetized it. So I never made a penny off of that. A lot of other people have.
Oh, man, a lot of people. You know, I saw the video. I kind of looked around. I typed in Amy G. Kazoo, and there was a ton of them.
Terrible quality.
Some of them.
But it was just at the dawn of YouTube that was a 2006.
Oh, okay.
Just for Laughs Gala.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what date was the time when YouTube really came into dominance for video material dissemination. I was way behind on that curve because I still haven't done it.
Oh man, you should be making a ton of money on that because the piece is brilliant, by the way.
Thank you. And it's nonverbal, so it has traveled well. Like, I've been on airplanes, and Just for Laughs is, of course, a dissemination machine. They just broadcast, and they have all those connections to broadcast everywhere. So I've been on airplanes and seen it. I've been in...
You're like, hey, wait a minute. That's me. Hold on.
I was paid a very nominal fee to do that.
What is on that video?
That's my Kazuchi act. I play America the Beautiful on three kazoos in three-part harmony from three different orifices.
Ah, like everybody.
Like me. there are a few other people that have done it. I saw one Brazilian woman that did the act sort of beat for beat.
Took your act and did your act beat for beat?
Beat for beat.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Probably like 8-10 years after the fact. But, you know, people see the act and they go, oh, I can do that. But then they don't get the joke.
Right.
You know, for me, the joke was always that the woman doing it.
Right.
Because if it's just anybody doing it, it's not as funny. I mean, I've done it a lot of different ways, so I can speak with authority. It's much, much funnier if the woman looks like she has never touched herself.
Right. That's the idea, is that when you show up, you're dressed in a conservative outfit. Looking somewhat conservative. I mean, that's kind of the joke. That's the idea.
Yeah. So when I've seen people that have copied the act, they didn't get that part of it. So they usually do it and they're trying to be sexy, which is just not funny.
Yeah, and usually when I try to do the same act, it doesn't work out.
Well, I do actually have a friend a guy friend did a similar act, but just played it out of the other end. I built the act after 9/11. This was my response to the sort of creepy nationalism that was very overwhelming, if you recall, in those days. Everybody with their flag waving, and it made me very uncomfortable then, as it does now. You know, alongside this very strange anti-feminist streak that we're experiencing right now with the rise of more than ever women to power, I feel like I had no idea that it would still be this potent of an act this many years later.
When did you do that?
In 2002.
Oh.
It's an old act.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's my oldest, probably, no, not my oldest, but it's among the oldest acts that I do. And I assume it's going to be the act that takes me into retirement.
Probably, huh?
Yeah.
So when you were little, did you do things just to shock people or...
No. I was very shy little girl. No, I was never out to shock people. I was out to amuse. I always liked entertaining people, but I was pretty shy. So I generally kept my ideas as a kid. I kept my ideas pretty much to myself. I would do it with my stuffed animals or behind the couch, or I made a lot of tapes, like radio dramas. Practical jokes. I did love practical jokes. I had an older brother. I still have an older brother. And that's partly where I got the idea that mild violence could be funny. He was older than me and bigger than me, and it was not allowed necessarily to beat me up, but he was allowed to commit random acts of physical comedy. So we would have like little slapstick routines, and we had a game called Beware of Falling People.
Called what?
Beware of Falling People.
Okay.
You try that with your friends. It's still fun.
Wait. So how does that work?
You just have to say, beware of falling people. And then in the near future, there's going to be a falling person.
Do you have to like look up a little bit? Kind of look over, look up.
And then your friend has to just be there to catch you.
What was the first time you said, well, I think I'm going to be outrageous on stage? Or did you just put together an act? Or how did that start?
I did always do plays and shows and things. I think theater is really what brought me out of my shell. Mm. Because, you know, there's a certain amount of control. And for like a control freak with insecurity issues, that was a very nice, comfortable place to be. It's some place where you knew what to say and you knew what to do. And you knew that this was going to be fun and you knew what you're going to be wearing and that everybody was going to be there and watching you. I was shy, but I did love attention. You know, I think that maybe because I wanted the attention so much was why I was so pent up about it. Mm-hmm. I put myself on stage singing a Dr. John song. Mm. I tried out for the African Drum Ensemble. That didn't work out so well.
Okay.
I really wanted in, but they were just not having it. I felt free on stage in a way I never did feel free, like playing sports or doing those things that I just didn't feel like I did very well. I loved dancing. I loved singing. I was never the best at any of these things, mm-hmm. but I did feel the freedom. And I think once you feel the freedom, you're hooked, or at least that's the way it was with me.
It's kind of freedom or being in the zone. You know, athletes talk about being in the zone. And when I'm doing a show, I feel that exact thing. I feel like I'm in the zone. It feels good. This is where I should be.
Yeah. That you're somehow specially tuned for this activity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I did a clown show for family audiences for 6 years. Mm. And then jumping into La Clique, which is very much adult circus in that sort of sexy circus vein that's become so far so fast since then. Mm-hmm. So that was the moment when I had to up my game as far as skills, going from being an hour on stage to being 6 minutes on stage.
Six minutes of you on stage.
Of me and no one else. When you've got an hour, you can just kind of relax and be with people.
Right.
But as all variety artists know, when you've got 5 minutes, you do all the sweat of an hour in 5 minutes.
That's right.
That's the job.
Yeah.
It's very concentrated entertainment. You get a lot more bang for your buck in a variety show because everybody's put their full hour show into their best five.
Yeah, you have 12 5-minute, 1-hour shows.
Yes, exactly. And that process of winnowing from an hour to 5 minutes, and that's pretty much for every act, I think really does up the game. Brett Haylock, the genius behind the putting together and the casting of La Clique and now La Soirée, you know, started out as a house manager, just watching things, but with a really short attention span. So his sort of ADD mindset made us all just get faster, tighter, funnier, always. It could never be too short for him. And that's why the show was so successful. Oh. There was no MC. There was no faff. It was just all killer, no filler. And even if you did six and he knew that you could do five, he would get you down to four.
Dang.
Just because that's what makes a good show. And I have him in my head and his two little pinchy fingers that I would see every time I came off stage going, And I think that's the process of becoming a variety artist, really. Can you just...
Yeah, cut out all the fat.
Yes, can you just do it faster?
Yeah, do it faster and less words.
And better.
Oh, and better.
But the better comes with doing less.
So what is entertainment?
Stupid word.
You're stuck with it now.
Well, am I? Who's seen it? Nobody's seen it. It was a show where I took everything I'd ever been ashamed of and turned it into entertainment.
Mm.
And I did that for fun and amusement, but also for therapeutic value. I'm not ashamed to admit I have had shame issues, said that shy little girl. And now I don't. Because after doing a show called Entertainment, where you really trot out everything that might be shameful it's come before and since then too, because I keep on having to update the show and have new shames to deal with.
So do you go back into your psyche and go, let's see, what was I ashamed of? Oh, that'll be funny on stage.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Because it's a very rich well of comedy and tension to be relieved. Because ultimately, I mean, everybody experiences those things, those embarrassing moments. And aren't embarrassing moment stories just the best at a party? I mean, isn't that how you get a good conversation started at a party?
Oh, yeah. Those are the funny conversations. Absolutely.
Yeah. And they are hard to talk about. But I do feel like when, if I am going to give the world a gift, and this comes, of course, by giving it to myself, it's to live happily, freely as myself with no shame. Right? I wish that on every human. I feel like if every human had that, we would be have a less problematic social situation.
A lot less pinned up stuff.
Yeah, anger and depression and violence and all that goes away once you nip the shame in the bud. And really, the best way to do it is just to laugh about it, just to talk about it. And everybody likes to hear those stories, so why not?
Yeah, and what's funny is that we think people judge us about those things, but the truth is, when people hear those things, they laugh and have fun about it, and they forget about it, and they go get a coffee.
And not only that, they love you. Uh-huh. Because exposing those imperfections and those cracks in your facade are exactly where people start to actually fall in love with you. And as a performer, I mean, let alone as a human, but as a performer, you need people to fall in love with you immediately.
Yep.
You know, that is the trick. I almost always started my acts with a fall. And this was against the better advice of many teachers that were like, oh no, we don't want to see, especially a woman who can't see a woman fall. We're just going to feel sorry for you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll see about that, I thought. And sure enough, you know, if you fell and you felt the pain, then of course they'll feel sorry for you. But if you just fall and dust yourself off and get back up again, then they know it's okay to laugh.
Mm.
And for me, that was instrumental because that meant that I could get away with the things that the guys did. People otherwise did not necessarily want to laugh at a woman getting hurt or a woman, you know, all that stuff. It's like people are just a bit gentle, a bit precious about women.
Yeah.
Which gets in the way of comedy.
So what would you suggest to people that, it's kind of a funny question, that want to be more shameless in their acts? What do you suggest that they do?
Well, just look at what they really feel shame about and then talk about it. Mm. Or develop an act. I mean, I think the fun thing for me was not just telling stories and talking about it, but developing an act that kind of exercises it. Like, I am hairy, right? Like my family, I never knew, like my family is not really like hairy. We're not Italian or anything, mm-hmm. but I always had really hairy legs and really hairy arms. And I started getting hair on my face and I thought I was turning into a man. I really did. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be a lesbian. I'm going to turn into a man. My hormones are screwed up. I've read stories about this. I like studied hermaphroditism and I was like, I am so screwed up. I'm going to turn in. I'm going through all this turmoil and trying to like figure out how to like not have a 3 o'clock shadow on my legs by gym class.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I couldn't talk to my mom about it because I was so ashamed.
Ah.
I thought that I was really like in trouble, that this signified something terrible about me and my life. But sure enough, in come college, she tells me, no, we actually have hirsutism in our family. You didn't know that?
What is that?
Like JoJo the dog face boy.
Hirsutism. Oh.
Like people with like really hairy faces and like all over body hair, that's called hirsutism.
Oh, okay.
And she tells me like well into my college years.
You're like, thanks, Mom. You could have told me this when I was a teenager.
Exactly. You could have saved me so much. But she was she would also have shame about that.
Wait, it's like in that scene in Teen Wolf where where Michael J. Fox, he goes and talks to his dad and finally his dad turns into a werewolf and he says, yes, son, it's okay.
Yeah, my life is like Teen Wolf. It was a lot like Teen Wolf. Come to find out.
I don't mean to make light of it, but
no. But listen, the whole point is to make light of it. That is the point. So there I am. I'm doing my show, and I realized, oh, I can deal with this hairy thing, because this is still a thing that is like awful. You know, like, you're not supposed to be seen to have whiskers on your face as a mm-hmm. woman. That is not generally a, you know, people don't even talk about it. Some people do, but in general, it's not even something that you see like products listed for.
Yeah.
I laughed so hard when I figured out this act. I finished with an act that makes me sort of particularly sweaty, the chicken head and stuff. So I was like, let me just take a second to have a little intermission here. And I go to my little table and I look in the mirror and I see little hairs. I do a little wax right there on the stage. I wax my face and I think, oh, okay, I'm perfect now. And then I put my boa on and I say, I'm ready for my close-up and I'm about to go into the next song. And then I unwrap the boa and the feathers from the boa have stuck to the wax on my face. And now I have a full white beard. Perfect. And I get to do the whole next song, which is just a straight torch number, but with a full white beard. Think, you know, this to me was so funny because I took the thing that I'm ashamed of, like having some hairs on my face, which nobody could see from the audience.
Yeah.
Nobody can see it from 2 feet away. And especially once you're over 40, you can't see it at all. But there I am. My shame makes me like actually go through the pain and ridiculousness of waxing on stage.
Oh yeah.
But then obviously all of that shame just made it so much worse. Cause now I'm going out there and I don't even know, you know, that it's there until I breathe one in and then I could choke on it and getting that out. And then I've also wrapped in the tarring and feathering, which was obviously a way to publicly shame people.
That's right.
So this idea that I then wrapped that up into like me shaming myself and tar and feathering myself for having had all these affairs with married men, which is what that kind of the song plays with. You know. It's a whole thing. Anyway, it's fun to discover the way that one little shame, like I have hairs on my chin, turns into an act where you're not just going, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't.
Yeah.
Because as a physical comedian, you want to make it visual. Make it visual in a way that people can understand and get on board with as comedy, not just as like a story that they need to feel something profound about.
Right. Or a complaint.
Or a complaint. Exactly. Yeah. It's none of those things. It's just, you know, you want to like bring the irony of the situation to its exaggerated end.
So when you're putting together a routine like that, I mean, with the facial hair and the feathers and everything, do you start, how does that process work? Do you just start doing it or how does that work?
Yeah. I think it's a very physical process for me. I have to actually be with the props in a space where I can see what happens because it's the accidents that happen that are the joke because that's what you can reproduce. That I knew I kind of wanted to do maybe something with waxing, but then the fact that on the waxing, that then that's all over your fingers and then the feathers can get on your fingers. Then you decide which accidents work the best.
Yeah, which are the funniest and
what are the funniest accidents that happen? And then you can engineer those accidents to be able to happen every time.
Mm.
And I tried lots of different wax things, you know, some was honey for a little while. It was, you know, whatever. Get in there, have a play, see what happens, see what's funny, tape it, have people watch it, look at it again, see what people laugh at.
Now let's switch gears a little bit about what is Big Time?
That's my pilot.
Ah.
Yes, I wrote a sitcom. I've shot it. We're in post-production now. It's about a middle-aged woman who's running away from the circus.
Yes.
Because you're right what you should know.
You think?
I have been trying to get out of this racket for so long, John. Sorry to tell you. I thought many years ago, I have got to figure out a way to work at home. I live in New York City. There's a lot of work here.
Mm-hmm.
I have a husband. I had a dog. You know, I would be nice to be with them at some point.
Yeah.
So I rededicated myself to my acting roots and started auditioning as an actor a couple years ago. and stopped taking the super long German cabaret gigs.
Right.
Those that are very well paid and are they treat you so well.
But you're gone for a long time.
You're gone for a long, long time. It's just a whole section of life that's gone. And I also found, and maybe this is something that your listeners will also understand, is that I could not book my solo show in North America.
Oh.
Because I wasn't on TV. So I understand this because, you know, I also don't go to see, I don't go to the theater to see somebody I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody does. You go see your friends or you go see somebody you know from, because they're famous.
Right. And that's why all the movie actors, even when they're on Broadway, even if they aren't as talented as the Broadway actors, they fill the seats.
Exactly. So theater needs to fill the seats. So in order for me to continue my habit of producing theater, I have to get famous, which is a terrible moonshot to put in front of yourself. You know, if you're famous, you know, even if you've just done some talent shows or things, then they know that the audience will be there, that they'll come to see you, and then they can book you.
Well, let's go back to your sitcom then.
This middle-aged woman who's running away from the circus wants to be on a sitcom. Wants to get out of this circus life, which can be very punishing on a body and a schedule and a social life, and get into TV acting. So it's this true story, of course, but there's a lot of misadventures and slapstick that happen along the way.
Can we see a trailer of that or something?
Not yet.
On that 6-month update, when I say, hey, how's...
Exactly.
Yeah. I'll say, yes. Here's the link for the trailer too.
Yes. I did a Kickstarter to make it happen. It's a PayPal pool. I suppose I could send you the link. Is that what you do?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. What the heck? I'll put the link on your show notes page.
That would be so nice. Wow. To think that there are people out there that would just help like that. It does a body good. It was incredible doing the Kickstarter.
Oh, was it? I've never done it before.
Yeah, it was really, really powerful. People just coming forward with whatever they could. Even the $5 and $10 donations feel like pure, unadulterated love. I put up the Kickstarter, and then I got a call from an Australian circus show that was like, hey, want to come and run away from your sitcom to do a circus?
And you're like, hold on a minute.
Well, yes, actually I could use that money. So I was doing it from like building and putting on a show in Australia, running this Kickstarter for the sitcom that I was concurrently writing during the day. It was all so magical because the material was coming fast and loose, especially being back in the circus scenario again. Wow. With all those hilarious personalities.
All right, well, we're going to switch gears once again to fact or something John just made up. Sound like fun?
Sure thing.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
I'm going to give you a headline. You're going to tell me whether it's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it.
Okay.
Here we go. First headline. Amy accidentally played a comic video she made during a command performance for a Saudi prince.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that true? And what was the video?
That's true. It gets worse. The story gets worse because the video was a part of this entertainment show where I was talking about stoning.
Oh.
All underscored by the Rainy Women number 12, Everybody Must Get Stoned.
Uh-huh.
A song. And there were all these clips of a Saudi woman that had been stoned in the street for being shamed.
Oh.
And a character that I play, this nun, Sister Kirsten Blessed. And this was all just an excuse for me to get into costume backstage and go out on this talent show scenario that I had built called Throw the First Stone.
Mm-hmm.
It's all set up. And then I give the audience stones and I do this really dumb act that it's an old act. People seem to like it. I never knew why they liked it so much. So I thought this is perfect way to get it out there, is that I can just have people throw stones at me. I was getting into this skull bra and hula, like puppeted skull bra that sings, and a grass skirt backstage, when I realized that that Saudi prince out there that I've been warned, I'm not even to look at. Oh. I can't even look at him. It's him and his whole harem and all of the gay men that attend to the harem that are the audience. And they're a wonderful audience. They are so, they love the show. They're having a great time. They are a very vocal audience because they're trying to show the boss what a good time they're having and what good audience members they are. Mm-hmm. So they're showing off by loving me that much. So it's going really well.
Yeah.
But then I realized that this video is all about a Saudi woman getting stoned.
Oh my
and I've
gosh.
Just armed my audience with stones to throw at me. I don't think I've ever been so scared in all my life, because it's only like 2 minutes long. I have 2 minutes to make this really fast change, and then I have to go on stage.
So what happened?
So they did it. They threw the stones. At the end of the show, the guy stood up and he actually approached the stage. He apparently never does this.
Nope.
He approached the stage, put out his hand, and shook my hand with both of his and wow. said, "This was a very powerful show."
Wow.
I was so relieved. I was just sweating bullets. You can imagine like what could become of me. I'm out there on an unnamed island alone. I could end up in somebody's bat curry the next day.
I'm sweating just listening to this story. I'm sitting here sweating.
It was very stressful, but I think because it hit close to home, I think he really felt it. I think he actually like received the message.
Mm.
And most people receive it on the other end of being like having shame and getting rid of it. But it seemed like he may have like received it on the other end of like, mine is not to give shame. I had done something that day besides just be a dick on stage, which is most of what I do.
We'll go to the next one. All right, you ready? Mm-hmm. Amy once wet herself on stage while doing stand-up on the shame of being an American.
True that.
Okay. No, wait, this has got to be on purpose, right?
No! So shameful!
Okay, since we're doing the shame thing, go.
Yeah, this was in Edinburgh in 2014, and it was the end of the run, so I was sick. I think I had some sort of, like, I was recovering some sort of bladder infection, too, so I was, like, just bucket after bucket of water to get through this. I was there alone. I was doing all my own PR. I was doing a show at 11 o'clock at night. It was really intense.
Yeah.
I was just getting through it with water and vitamin C and, you know, anything anybody would throw at me. Being on at 11 o'clock in Edinburgh means that you really go on at midnight because there's every show gets pushed a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now this night, but yeah, you still have to be ready. And for me, being ready at 11 o'clock meant that I was dressed, and I have just layer and layer and layer of like underdressing and gags, and like there's all sorts of mics and little gags stuffed into every little crevice and little cranny and pockets and things. You know what it's like.
Yeah.
I had all this on, and the guy before me was just going on and on, and he was late and he was on a roll or something. And he just kept on going on and on and on. I'm just waiting in the wings, waiting for my turn. But you can't leave because he might stop at any moment.
That's right. And then you're on.
Then you're on. And I have to do all of my own like changing of the guard and setting my props. And so I couldn't go to the bathroom. I'd had so much water and I couldn't go to the bathroom because I had all these like layers and gags and I didn't know when he was stopping, and he went 25 minutes over. I heard him leaving the stage. I'm going to go on stage. I'm going to do this thing. I did it halfway through the show. In that moment where I had to go off stage when the video played. Mm-hmm. So the video is playing. I'm off stage. And as soon as I'm off stage, of course, I had to pee so badly, and I'm taking off all my clothes. They're like wet leotards and wet feathers and all this stuff. And I'm getting out of that and getting into something the skull bra. And there's this little girl who was helping me with that change. And I said, my kingdom for a pot to piss in. I need a pot to piss in. I should not, those were my words. I am just that much of a nerd. I actually said those words backstage. I don't know if there was something better that I could have said where she would have actually given it to me.
She's like, what is she doing? Shakespeare in the middle of the
I know. So stupid. I just needed a pot to piss in. And she didn't get it for me, obviously. And then the song stopped and I had to go back out on stage. And so then I go out in my skull bra and my grass skirt and I do the thing. And thank God, Dr. Footlights takes over, right? Because anybody that is on stage anytime knows that Dr. Footlights kicks in and you don't feel anything anymore. Whatever like sickness or pain or problem you had just dissipates in the warmth and good lighting and attention that you are receiving.
I love that. Dr. Footlights. That's the first time I've heard that. The adrenaline goes.
That's it. Adrenaline and good lighting takes care of everything.
Yep.
And all is well. I'm up to my last act. I'm up to the kazoo, which is, you know, my oldest, simplest, easiest act. It always works. It's easy to do.
Oh no.
I get to that and I'm so like, oh, so as soon as the lights change, I'm going into that last final act. I feel my bladder, ugh. Right? Like the preliminary finish line just lands on my bladder and I go, oh God, this is not so good. I can get through this. I can do this. I'm an adult. I make the change. I'm standing there. I'm in a pool of light, just one big follow spot on me head to toe, right? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the shame of being an American. This is in Edinburgh. They really understand. This is the peak Obama years. So there's that like heightened actual patriotism that is also a little uncomfortable, but I'm talking and making jokes about all these things. I feel the pressure, but I'm doing fine. It wasn't until I actually took my underwear down to around my ankles where, you know, that natural cue, the physical body is a powerful thing. It knows exactly what to do when you take your underwear to your ankles. It started. I clenched it. I clenched it so hard. I'm like, I'm just clenching everything in my life. I'm clenching it all together so nothing is going to, like, but I can't, I really, it was so unstoppable. And I don't think that earlier bladder infection helped at all. But there I am. I'm doing a full, I'm grabbing my crotch, actually, standing on stage, grabbing my crotch, talking about what it is to be an American in the international scene. There is like a little splashes of happening around my ankles. I start to actually do that dance and I'm doing like an eagle pose. You know, if you're familiar yoga, like my legs are just fully wrapped around everything. I start to dance. I go, oh, this is better if I'm moving. I start moving and I'm moving and this is okay. And so like the walk that I normally take just turns into the sprint upstage. Absolutely just completely dodging myself and all of this. And I can't hold it anymore. It's starting to happen. So I run away. I run away from the spotlight. I'm in the middle of my routine. I'm in the spotlight. So there I am. I run away from the spotlight. And for a second, I just feel all of that, like the relaxation. Like that shy girl that just wants to be in the dark, that like would hide in the closets. And there I was finally like, at home, like in the closet. And sure, like the puddle just goes. But of course, the follow spot finds me.
Oh, of course.
I've been doing a fucking comedy show with the same follow spot. So he thought I was just messing with him. So he does that classic clown trope. He zoomed, got right back on me and catches me in the act of actually producing a puddle for myself on stage.
And he thinks you're just messing around.
He thinks I'm messing around or something. The audience obviously thinks it's hilarious because it looks completely choreographed. I am wetting the stage and now I am actually living in a pure flood of shame, of like I can't control my bladder 5-year-old shame. Meanwhile, the audience is just laughing and I realize there's like, what am I doing? This is gold.
Yeah.
This is what I am about. This is what they came for. This is what I'm here to give. So I just let it go. And it was the best pee I've ever had. It was one of those super long pees too, you know, where you just keep on peeing.
Oh yeah.
I probably could have sung the whole national anthem. It was so like long, this waterfall of pee that just kept on going. Then I had finished the thing. I walked over to get the mic stand. I have to finish this act now. So I walk away, I go grab the mic stand, walk back, I see my trail of little wet footprints on the stage.
Nice.
Put the mic stand right in the middle to like vaguely obscure this reflecting pool of shame. And finish the act. But really just knowing deeply, deeply, deeply that there is just no difference between shame and entertainment once the light hits it.
That's right. And the director's like, keep it. Can you do the pee thing again next time we're on?
No, but listen, my landlord, the guy that had let me stay in his beautiful penthouse place that I really longed to stay in the next year and all of that, he was actually in the audience that night. And as I'm standing like in a receiving line, people are actually like coming up and shaking my hand after that. I couldn't believe it. I was just laughing so hard trying to keep it in. But they're shaking my hand and going, oh, it's amazing. You said so, an amazing show. So funny, blah, blah, blah. Then my landlord, and I just, I guess, kind of blocked out that he had been in the house, comes up and whispers in my ear, you must have amazing pelvic control.
Oh, boy.
Oh, you know, exactly. Your weakest, like the weakest spot is the place where people will think you're strongest. It's so funny. If you show it, if you show your weakness, it becomes a strength.
True.
I don't think I told anybody for like a week. It made me laugh really, really hard, but I still couldn't tell anybody. It was just that shameful. It was like actual real life shame.
Oh, man.
And I don't think I told the story publicly for years.
Well, you sure have now.
Now I have.
All right, next headline. Amy's favorite movie is G-Force. A movie starring an FBI secret agent talking hamster.
I gotta see that one. I've never seen it.
Oh, that means the answer is no.
No, but now you made me want to see it. Talking hamsters?
Yeah, I think it's on Netflix. It's called G-Force. Yeah, it's about talking hamsters. And they're all secret agents, secret FBI agents.
Whoa.
I made it up, but I know that next time I talk to you, it'll be your favorite movie now.
You know me so well.
All right, next one. Amy's early variety acts included synchronized couch dancing, doing a ventriloquist act with a piece of ginger, and showing people her penis.
All true.
Okay. Well, the first couple are easy. It's that last one.
Like I said, I had an older brother who I was endlessly trying to impress.
Mm-hmm.
And he would hang out with his friends and I wouldn't be allowed in his room. And I thought, what do they have that I don't have?
Well, there you go.
And so I marched in there and I thought, this is going to be the way to win friends and influence people. And I pulled down my undies and I pulled out my vagina as far as it would go. Like, look, I have a penis too. Really just a desperate cry for help, you know? And also like right in line with that, like I would do anything for attention. But then once I had it, I was not sure what to do with it.
If they just look at you like, what is she doing?
Yeah. I mean, it's sexual assault. And I'm sorry, you guys.
All these years later.
I know now that I shouldn't have put you in that awkward position with your friend's kid sister. But I didn't know any better at the time. I just wanted some attention. And I wanted to be in the boys' club.
How old are you at the time?
Oh, like 29. No, I'm kidding. No, I don't know how. You know, I have a very bad sense of time. I think I was probably like 9 or...
Well, so then did you put that in your act?
No.
Well, that's what it says. It says Amy's early variety act.
That's an early variety act. Like, like, how do I get their attention?
Okay. That's a strange thing to put in an act.
No, that was just my... That was how... That's like how I took on, like, entertainment. What can I do to entertain these guys?
Okay, I got it.
For a short, powerful punch. What's it going to be?
That was fact. Or something John just made up.
All right, we're going to do some fan questions.
I have fans?
Yeah, you have fans. You have lots of fans.
Why? That's so nice.
You have so many fans. All right, let's start out. Doug Shear of Shear Genius, he's one of the top school assembly entertainers in the country. In fact, he asked a similar question as Hal Myers did. Hal Myers, a.k.a. Damien.
Yeah.
Although they worded it differently, I'll read Doug's. Doug, one of his questions was, as a comedian who relies on physical comedy, oftentimes overtly sexual in nature, are you seeing just as many overly sensitive and easily offended people in all countries, or is mainly the Western world the issue?
Yeah, that's a North American problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a stripper. I don't usually, I could go to the place that people would have a big problem with. Mm-hmm. I infer the idea that I have genitalia that plays music.
Yeah.
But you don't see anything. Honestly, I think the major problem, and I tell you, I would have gone on a lot of these television shows a lot earlier had I been a man, because how many times have you seen the guy pull out his pretend penis and do some like fishing act or whatever? Like it's a standard bit,
right?
A physical bit where a guy pretends he has a penis and does things with it that are silly.
Yeah,
I think it's an old bit. Everybody does their own take on it. It's not like I'm saying people are copying, but I'm just saying it's an old bit.
Yeah.
But the idea that a woman has genitalia under her skirt that you don't ever see is not allowed on TV.
Mm.
Like in America, it's been on TV everywhere else. And you know, Ellen wanted it and Oprah wanted it, and they've asked for it on the AGTs, but I'm not allowed to do that on US network TV because it's just too much. To right. Imagine that a woman has genitals.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. That is already too far. Now, that is a North American problem, because every other country, and I have played in over like 46 countries around the world by now, and every one of them, that act plays for kids. It's funny. Everybody loves it. It's funny for kids. It's a very basic, silly thing. Now, of course, there's other levels of like nationalism and my bigger chat on that. But as far as the act goes, that is North American Puritanism.
All right, we're going to go on to our next fan question. Mm-hmm. Although this is, I don't know if this is really a fan question. Barry Friedman, Dale Kay, and Romany all say, Amy rocks. She's amazing. And the world is ready for Amy.
Oh, are they though? Are they really?
The way we've been talking, we don't know if the entire world is ready for Amy. Some of it is, some of it isn't.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't know if I'm ready for the entire world. No, I do. I am ready for the entire world, actually. I really am. I thank those nice people that said those nice things. That's really cool.
Very, very nice.
I don't think of myself as somebody that people know. So whenever I come across people that I don't know that know me, I'm a little shocked and very flattered. So thanks, guys.
Before I let you go, do you have something else you want to plug? Maybe your Instagram or something
sure.
like that?
I have a couple. I do. By all means, give me a follow on Instagram at Amy GForce. Very little to do with the hamsters, of course, until I see them, and then I incorporate them into my every post.
You will.
But listen, something else. I've just joined the cast of the Big Apple Circus, so I will be on at Lincoln Center this winter season from October through February. So come on up to Lincoln Center and see me sometime.
Oh, congratulations. That's great. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's exciting.
And I think, don't you have a newsletter or something? Somebody can sign up on your...
Yes, you can sign up on my website, amy-g.com, and you'll hear all the news that's fit or unfit.
All the news that is Amy G.
Yep.
Well, thanks a lot for doing my show. That was awesome. That was a lot of fun.
Such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And listeners, make sure to sign up for Amy's newsletter on her website and give her a follow on Instagram. You can contact me through my Facebook. Just shoot me out a message there. While you're there, join my Facebook group at The Variety Artist, where you can ask me to ask questions of our guest and join in with Free for All Fridays and Marketing Mondays. And make sure to click those 5 stars on the review section. It really helps a lot. If you have time, write a quick nicey nice post under the review section. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist, but your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.